Preface the panel, I just want to start out by saying that I had volunteered to help with coordinating today's day, and I sort of was reflecting on it. I wondered why, since I'm not exactly part of what we call an educational system, so to speak. The work that I do involves working collaboratively with our schools and to help parents seek local resources when they are struggling with an issue and don't know where to go to get help. The more I thought about the work that our Family Resource Center does, it made me think about the countless agencies and the people who are on the ground making sure students get to school and parents have the resources to raise a happy and a healthy child. I suggested that we bring this panel together because I wanted to showcase what goes on behind the scenes at school or in a community to get a child to school. Practically every day, our Family Resource Center in Laytonville gets a call from the school about a child needing clean clothes or shoes or a warm coat or lice treatment supplies, a backpack, school supplies, a prom dress. The list goes on and on. We assist their parents in getting on food stamps to help feed their children. We help parents fill out Medi-Cal insurance applications. We make appointments and referrals to mental health counselors when the times are tough. The folks sitting on this panel today, I am sure, have encountered similar scenarios and have helped kids, teens, families, and parents get through a tough time or pointed them in the direction of a helpful resource. I want to start by turning it over to Aura Lee. She's from the Mendocino County Youth Project, whose business card in my Rolodex says, helping teens help themselves, offering support and resources to teens to help cope with life. She has to leave at 11, so I'm going to let her start. Aura Lee, if you want to go ahead, you've got the questions in front of you. Feel free to answer those or just go ahead and speak on sort of what I just prefaced. And thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Again, my name is Aura Lee. I've worn many hats in this community. I am also a school counselor at the Willis Charter School on the south end of town. And I've worked for the Youth Project for the past 4 years. And I've worked for pretty much every agency that provides these kinds of services in my 6 years of being in this community, partly because there's a consistently moving target around what kind of services need to be provided in this community, and also what funding is coming down from various sources. I work with at every single junior high and high school in this district, and I go in and I do short-term crisis counseling, which means that I work with people on coping skills and connecting their families with resources that are available in the community. I go in and I offer small groups with people often referring me to those small groups, which includes anger management, alcohol and other drug groups, empowerment groups, and the list goes on. I also go into classrooms and I make presentations on the same subjects that I just spoke to, on cutting, on healthy coping mechanisms, on just really the list goes on and on, depression and suicide and just all the topics that basically the teenagers really want to talk about but don't have anybody there to talk with. I have a harm reduction philosophy that I'm allowed to work with my students. The both of the agency that I work for and the youth and the charter school allow me to not say no to drugs because that's really working. It's not really working. So my philosophy is going in there and empowering and educating young people to understand what they're doing when they're consuming drugs or the real dangers of doing self-harm or of the real risks of getting involved with gangs, all those kinds of things. And I certainly sometimes I'm pushing for abstinence or those kinds of things, but most of the time, I don't know if any of you all were in school when the DARE officers came in and told you just say no to drugs. I personally had the experience of they got to the mushrooms part and I was like, those sound kind of cool. I might want to try them. I didn't know about them till now, but you know, thanks for letting me know. So there's a fine balance between empowering young people with knowledge and education and also letting them know about things and introducing them to ideas. And yet I think that it's really important that we empower our young people to believe that they can make their own decisions, believe that they are able to make healthy choices given the information that is out there. What excites me about my work is my ability to go in. I have really developed a reputation in this town where I have everybody on my side, and that is great. That includes the administration, that includes the young people, that includes the parents. I interface with mental health, with the police, with the journalists, with, I'm literally kind of a sociologist of sorts. I love being able to go into any room and talk with various people. And especially the youth, and being somebody who can translate adult language to youth language and vice versa. What challenges me is that I wish there was about three or four more of me, because there's simply less and less resources, and the work that I do really does make an impact. I really do see young people come to me and share with me years later, you know, when you said that thing, I was like, yeah, I didn't really think you were listening, but time and time again, I get pleasantly surprised, or I'll get a thank you card pinned on my door or something that will help me understand that what I'm doing actually does make a difference. If you're a dance teacher, you show somebody a move, and then you can see that they got the move. With this emotional kind of work, it's a lot more difficult to know what has sunk in and what hasn't. The challenges also is just working with all of the getting services to the people who need them the most often have parents who are the most checked out. And so how do I bridge the gap between the kids who need the most services and actually getting their parents to show up and sign a paper or give me, you know, mostly it's signing paperwork and just or showing up and having a mediation. I will tell you, 75% of the kids that I sit down in front of say, I hate my parents and I want to spend more time with them. It's like, how does that work in your brain? And really what it comes down to is that they want to spend more quality time with their parents. They don't want their parents yelling at them or telling them they have to do this chore or this thing or that thing. Just having quality time where their teenagers can, they can have good conversation. I think a lot of parents think that that is not what teenagers want. And even if they're pushing back and they're resisting it, a lot of the time what I'm getting is that that's what they want, and they just want to see, well, are you going to give it to me or not? Because, you know, I'm going to push hard, and are you going to be able to see through my resistance and my trying to find where my boundaries are? I work with a lot of young people who have no boundaries, and a lot of them tell me once they're on probation, I don't tell anybody this, but, you know, I kind of like it. I kind of like having to go get piss tested every week, and I kind of like having somebody who is giving me some kind of boundary. I was one of those teenagers that was looking for boundaries, and I almost died a couple times trying to find the edge of that. So I'm back here doing this work because I want to save people who were like me. If I had somebody like me around when I was younger, maybe I would have made a couple less bad decisions, but I wasn't there, so I don't know. I see that the challenges and the hardships for the families that I work with, that I am seen as part of the system, and I am part of the system, and I do have to write CPS reports, and that is something that, and again, the highest needs families are the ones who most often have cases that are worth writing CPS reports, and so they want help, and yet if I ask for help, then I might have you come and invade my privacy or take my kid or make me go do these things that I already don't have enough time to do all of it. I'm not making it happen. And so how are you? You're going to come in here and tell me and want to me to listen to you and have you translate what I haven't been able to talk to with my kid about? Like, who are you? I get definitely a lot of pushback from families with resistance and families who are trying to make up for lost time. And that time is... it is lost. So the hardships that our families are facing run the full gamut. I work with kids who are dealing with drama, the regular teenage, you know, friendship challenges, to there's a lot of self-harming going on in this town, a lot of people cutting themselves, a lot of young men punching walls, thinking they're being cool, but that's still self-harming. There is eating disorders and lots and lots of drug and alcohol abuse. There's lots of kids who are growing up too fast. Many kids who are elder kids who are taking care of their younger siblings, and the stress of and the challenge of trying to be successful in school and to have fun and babysit your parents and babysit your parents. That was no Freudian slip there. babysit your younger siblings. And it can go even as far as some of the, I'll just drop a really quick, kind of really tragic one that I've had to deal with a couple times as a parent who's prostituting their own daughter for drugs. I mean, there's a full gamut. There are definitely gang issues in this town, a lot less evident than in Southern California, because it mostly has to do with drugs. And so people aren't running around saying, yeah, I'm here, pick up my pounds of drugs. It's up in the hills, so we're not seeing that as much. And right now I have, the last question is, what opportunities for student leadership development does your line of work provide? I'm currently offering a peer education group at the high school. We are going into the junior high and into the freshman class, and they're talking about, essentially I work with them once a week, and we train them to talk with the kids about self-esteem, about empowerment, about how to be successful in school, about alcohol and other drugs, all the same subjects that I've already talked about. But coming from juniors and seniors, coming from the right juniors and seniors, I should say, can really be a positive impact hearing people who are just a little bit older. I know when I was 15, 30 was old, and so I've just officially become old last month. So I've also provided and worked with the Sister to Sister, which is a group. I trained that for the last 2 years, and that's also, again, mostly juniors and seniors, some sophomores, inviting the eighth graders to come over to the high school towards the end of their eighth grade year and get a, hey, this is high school 101. These are the things that you should be paying attention to and be aware of. And can we answer any questions and debunk any myths about what you've heard about high school? Do we get trash canned or whatnot? So I'm constantly looking for opportunities to empower our young people. I think that one of the problems and the challenges I see in our current education system is that we want to empower these teenagers to be adults, and yet we don't really want to give them the responsibility at the same time. And I think that a lot of teenagers see through that and are confused by the mixed messages of, I want to demand that you become an adult at this point, and yet I'm not going to give you the freedoms as much as it would take for you to be able to really show up and show me that you're growing up and taking responsibility for who you are as a person. So that's probably what I have to say. I could probably stand up here and talk to you guys for another 5 hours, but I'll stop there. And if there's any questions anybody has for me, is that...
Yeah, I was going to say, since she has to leave here in a few minutes, I just want to give you the opportunity to ask her any question that you have, and then afterwards we'll move on to our other panelists. So go ahead. Thank you.
Yes?
Is there a common societal attitude, perhaps, that you feel is contributing to the emotional problems that some of these children are having? Maybe it's ease of drugs, maybe it's not any anything about a higher power that makes them think they're bigger than they really are. Can you go to something that can be changed, that can make a difference? That you would maybe make you lose your job?
That would be great. I would love it if I could just be like, yeah, I'm retiring, because I'm no longer needed. I think that here we have an amplified, we're in a drug culture. I think that the part of it is that it's become very socially acceptable, and it's very, I think that there's an excessive use of drugs in this culture because it's so accepted, and there's lots of inter-family partying and that kind of thing. There is a very big dichotomy between the people who have been living here for a long time and who are the ranchers and the locals with the incoming hippie, you know, drug, and I don't want to, you know, label, I'm using these big generalizations and I don't want to offend anybody, but there's definitely not as much, there's a lot of anti-system sentiment in some of the more alternative cultures and or subcultures in this community. That I think contribute a lot to looking at the system as the enemy, with all the drug busts. And it's like, oh, the people who are busting people aren't the same people who are trying to give your kid therapy. And I've talked to over 40 therapists in this town, and none of them really care about if you're growing weed. It's more like, are you having your 10-year-old trim weed? Because then we have a problem with that. But other than that, like, we don't care what you're doing. We just want to have your kid have coping skills and the ability to deal better with life. And I think because there's such an anti-system attitude towards a large majority of this, the subcultures here, that causes quite a bit of dissonance between actually getting services to the families that need them most.
That would be a difficult solution.
Yeah, you didn't answer it. You didn't ask an easy question, so I wasn't trying to give you an easy answer. But that would be that's the thing that comes to mind as you ask that question.
Mm-hmm. Can I? Sorry.
Or is it a direct comment? Did you want to just?
I have a question. I'll go.
Oh, okay.
Do you work with Native healers? For example, I know Martin Martinez in his Red Road program that's offered weekly is something that teens can show up to.
Yeah, I have definitely had various moments where I have had him come to some of my activities and invited him to come and work with some of my youth. And I also, one of my coworkers is part of the Sherwood Valley Rancheria, and so I have, I do have quite a few friends in the Native community. Sometimes it's a great match, and sometimes it's not. Mm-hmm.
Early on, you used the word cut or cutting. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Self-harming takes a wide range of things, but kids who are breaking apart razors and cutting their arms... their legs is the typical place. Mm-hmm. Some kids will like twist their hair out and literally turn it and yank out chunks of their hair. And again, all of these are strategies towards. Some kids will take erasers and give themselves eraser burns. Even for myself, who is incredibly compassionate and empathetic, I had a hard time understanding why kids would do this, and after research and understanding, it's that the kid feels so overwhelmed by the pain that they have in their life that if they can localize it to somewhere and they can give it some place to be released, the other element is I have no control in my life, and this is the only place I have control. And so those are the two major psychological ideas behind why kids are doing that kind of thing. So actually quite prolific, and I could go off and tell you at least 10 famous actors and actresses who, so it's not just a teenage thing, but there have been very successful people who have had that kind of issue. Yeah, and then...
Well, my granddaughter had trichotillomania, so I'm familiar with pulling, that's what it's called, from pulling in the hair. My question has to do with more about same thing, about the cutting and the suicide rate. What sort of comparisons do we have as far as rates for Mendocino County versus, you know, other state locations, other counties? Do you have any information on that? And is it because of our culture here, is it a higher amount, or is it just that we're such a smaller community that it's more prevalent or more, you're going to know more people that have to suffer from this kind of issue?
Pat might be able to answer some of that question. There isn't a whole part of the issue there when you're asking that question is that a lot of the time the statistics that are out there aren't localized to this area in specific. So, and Pat has done a series of asking questions that have gives us local data to compare to other agencies. Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of that data to pull from. I would just be able to say that it's definitely a standing issue, but I don't think I'd be able to speak accurately in a direct comparison on that. I think that in the state of California overall, that's the level where I can start to compare, and it seems like there is a little bit higher rates in California in general than in some of the other states, but it would be a pretty in-depth question to answer. And she might have some stuff, but
I
not...
I wish I was prepared for that question because I do have access to it, but no, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. A comparison between Mendocino County or even, you know, Willits and the state of California. But I do know that you'll hear more about what I have to say, and without taking away your spot here... There was, you know, a higher rate of suicide ideation, which is dangerous, where you start to make the plan and then you may even attempt it. And over the last 4.5 years of the program that I've worked with, we've been able to reduce that ideation. Not significantly, but enough that, 5% might be two students, which is a lot for our local and small communities.
Mm-hmm. I'll probably make this the last question. Would love to engage longer, but I just, yeah.
Just in terms of emotional education, I think that we're really fortunate to have like peer counseling and things like that, but generally I think that the schools don't have much emotional education. I think schools generally don't focus on that. You know, it's like math and reading, writing, arithmetic. So can you speak to what programs you have to help kids learn how to deal?
I would have been able to have a lot longer list last year, but our current district has just gone through a $750,000 budget cut this year and next year. So virtually all of the programs that we're offering those kinds of education at the high school have gone away. The programs I just told you about, the peer education thing, it's pretty much one of the only ones left. The peer counseling program at the high school, which was very strong and in place, has been drastically reformed and might be going away altogether next year. So they're really, and that's just 30 out of 500 kids at, and they have the good grades, and they have to have gone to the interview, and it's a very rigorous process to get into that. So you already have to have a certain amount of emotional intelligence in order to be able to get into that program. It's part of why I like doing my peer education program, because I'm targeting a wider range of people, and I don't make it as hard to get in, just because I think that I would have probably been a little bit more credible than the really, really cool, popular kid at school when I was in high school, because I was like the bad kid that was selling drugs, and then if I'd come around, and so just having a wide range of people who come from different backgrounds. No, I think that that's probably one of the bigger challenges, is that I go into these schools and talk about these things, and there isn't a common vocabulary or common understanding amongst the teachers and the administration and inter-district, within the schools and whatnot. There isn't and people are trying their best, and it's all grant funded, because the main education system is only funding, like you said, the main core pieces. And so people like Pat do an amazing job at bringing in a bunch of money, and then, you know, 5-year program, great. And then where is the rest of the money coming from? Oh, it's not. So then that program goes away. And so there's a lot of, I think the inconsistency makes it really difficult to establish a cultural norm around having emotional intelligent vocabulary. So I hope I was answered most of your questions. Thank you so much for being part of this. Maybe some year I'll come and be involved, and seemed very cool. I've seen the brochure around, so power to you guys for being leaders. Thanks for letting me duck out early. So, all right.
Okay, so our next speaker is Pat Sanborn. And I had the pleasure of working with Pat on a 4-year grant-funded project, which is called the Bronco Project. Pat has successfully managed grant programs focused on youth development and violence and substance abuse prevention in the Mendocino County Public Health System and in the local schools. The most recent program was a Safe Schools, Healthy Students Systems Change Grant called Building Resiliency Opportunities for the North County Bronco. This provided comprehensive services for students in grades K through 12 in the Willits, Laytonville, and Brown Valley school districts. Pat holds a master's degree in psychology and organization development from Sonoma State University, and she has worked with a variety of teams facilitating positive change. She has lived in Mendocino County for 30 years, and she currently resides in Willits.
Thank you, Jema. Yes. Thank you for having me here. I'm very excited for this opportunity to speak about the work that I've done over the last four and a half years in the North County here. So as Jema was saying, the Building Resiliency Opportunities for the North County, or Bronco, how it's been familiarized, was a comprehensive 3-school district grant, systems change grant, and provided a wide array of services and activities to students in preschool all the way through 12th grade. So this grant was funded by a collaboration between the Department of Education, or the Federal Department of Education, the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, and the Department of Justice. And so when they built this grant project, which was back in, I think the first funding was in 2002, they have built a model around how to have success and have measured everything along the way. And so my work as project director over the last 4 years with this has been mostly administrative and providing the services and activities for the kids and working with communities in their development process, as well as how can they work together more collaboratively. And I want to just talk a little bit about, I heard you all talking a little bit about the Common Core curriculum and how that's coming into play now, and teachers have to learn a new way of providing education. But I want to just equate that with what Bronco has been modeled on, which is a systems change, and where you are getting out of that silo system of, okay, this person only does law enforcement, this person only does teaching or education, and this person only does probation. So when the federal departments work together, they realize that everybody has a stake in the outcome, and so let's think about working together and doing this in a better way. And so that's how they built the funding source. And so what I've done with Bronco in the three communities is not only invite the leaders of the different people, of the different agencies together, and had a core management team that enabled us to do the work in a better way and to look at how our strategic plans for each of the groups might be aligned in order to better get the resources out of everything. So I just wanted to give you that little bit of background, because it's been complex and also challenging for me as an administrator of the programs, but also for the people that are doing the work. So I just want to give you a little bit more information about it, in that there are five elements. And it addressed school safety, it addressed substance abuse prevention, school safety and violence, and it addressed student social and emotional supports, it addressed mental health services, and then it also addressed early childhood learning. So we had some activities and objectives in each of those elemental areas. So what excites me was... The prospect that really excited me about this work was that I did get to invite a lot of different people in the community to work together and to think about doing things a little differently. With that came a lot of challenge, in that there's always a fluid, an organic process to team building and to working with individuals and groups, in that you just get everything going, then all of a sudden somebody leaves that was a key person. So now you have to find a way to make that work with somebody new, and then go through that whole education process about what they're trying to do. And maybe even working with somebody who has been used to just, you know, straight and narrow thinking, or just in that silo space. So that's challenging. And then it's also challenging to see how students have really suffered through a lot of the problems that they have. And then knowing that there's we have services, but that they couldn't get the services because perhaps their parent didn't want to approve, give permission for mental health services, and the teacher was giving a referral, or the principal was giving a referral, and we knew the student needed help, they wanted help, but their parent would not sign off a permission form because they were afraid that their lives would be inspected. So those are the kind of challenges that I faced in getting the services to as wide a group as possible. So getting to the question of challenges and or hardships with students or families, again, I want to say that we were able to provide a lot of mental health services in each of the communities through the different organizations that we worked with. Either we provided contracts that provided funding, or we just found that the systems worked together, that we had the same outcome in mind, and so we just collaborated together more closely. But The other problem I see, or the other hardship was with students and families, is that I don't think that we found a lot of truancy. And what we found when we started looking harder at truancy was that it's not just a problem in itself, in that all of the data that we were collecting had to do with, there was connections between the number of students or the rates of substance abuse use. There was connection between depression and students who had higher rates of truancy. And there was a connection between, you know, some criminal activities or some probation. So we found that very disturbing, but also we found that it was a platform that we could get more people involved with. And so we worked with the district attorney. We're trying to get the district attorney's office to work with the schools in solving this problem so that when they go through a school attendance review board meeting, or they're being referred to one of those meetings to increase their school attendance, we have some other, what would you call it? We have some other sanctions to provide. So some other ways of getting them into class other than just saying you have to come to class. So I think I'm going off a little bit here. So I'm going to go back to here because the model that we followed was about creating a legacy and being able to implement the work so that it would be sustainable. Now that the funding is over, we don't have as much, we have some sustainability, but we don't have the funding available still in order to continue the work and providing the contracts. But I do want to say that we were able to sustain mental health services in Willits, in Around Valley, and to some extent in Laytonville. And through some partners that we've worked with, like the Youth Project has been a partner, they're continuing to work with students in some of the threes in Willits, and I'm not sure about Laytonville anymore. And then we have the law enforcement has agreed to work with the school in, you know, managing school safety in to some capacity and working with getting a school safety plan together. So, you know, I'm actually more comfortable if I just try to answer questions and try to answer these questions. So I'm going to open it up a little bit earlier for those who want to ask me a question. Yes?
What is the premise or the goal of all of these services that you're organizing and providing? Is there a measurable, like, reduction in truancy, or reduction in school violence, and reduction in, you know, alcohol and substance abuse for teens or school-aged children?
Yes, we collected a lot of data over the 4 years. In fact, that was one of the critical pieces of this model, was that it's about data collection and then looking at your data and making adjustments if you need to, and then going back and implementing the service again or changing what needed to be changed. So I have like tons of data to share, not today, but it's available, and the school district should have access to that. And if you were to ask either, well, maybe Jama, but the school superintendents, they could give you the information. But one of the things that we did achieve is we increased the number of mental health services for students in the three school districts by over 400%. So when you start with a system that has very minimal, and then you load it with mental health counselors in all three communities that are seeing students on a regular basis for not just crisis problems, but for situational depression, perhaps, you know, whether it might have been a divorce in the family, or mom and dad might have gotten arrested or something like that, or just some of those issues that students face when they're growing up. So we had a 400% increase in services over the four years of the grant. We had a decrease in substance abuse. Let's see, I wrote these down here. So in alcohol, tobacco, and other drug prevention and intervention, we reduced the number of times students reported having used marijuana and or alcohol by about 50%. So we measured this annually through the California Healthy Kids Survey, and that's, if you're not familiar with that, that is a survey that students take in 5th, 7th, 9th, and 11th grade, and it asks a whole slew of questions about, you know, school connectedness, about the substance use, about how safe they feel in the school climate, whether they are depressed or not, and to what extent. And then we added a different, we had an additional survey that asked some more perception questions about, did they think other students used a substance perhaps, and how high was that? And what we found consistently is that students actually think that their peers use more often than they actually do. So that's the perception, and if you can change that perception, you effectively will change the activity itself. But also what we did in alcohol tobacco was delay the onset of use from at the 7th and 9th grade level. So students at the that were in 5th grade when we started providing services, they received like 4 years worth of services. And so over that time period, and through substance abuse counseling that we also had for 3 of the 4 years, we reduced students' use of onset. So whereas they might have had their first drink at 5th or 6th grade, now they're not doing that. So they received the benefit of the services. So I tend to ramble a lot and go on. So, and also, I think I wanted to answer your question a little more completely. I think the outcome of this whole funding was to increase graduation rates and school attendance.
I'm just wondering, listening to what Orly was saying, and a lot of it's grant-driven, how sustainable is that 400% increase in the mental health services that you provided? Is it based on grants? Is it something you're
going to
have to keep trying to
give? Well, Willits and Round Valley both received an elementary counseling grant, so they'll continue with some mental health services for grades kindergarten through fifth. But yeah, that is one of the most difficult areas to sustain, because when we were operating, we were paying MFTs, marriage and family therapists, to provide the service. And, you know, they can't afford to work for free, or the school doesn't have money to hire them. But in better times, you know, better economic times, that was how things worked. People were hired as a result of the funding and to continue the service because it was valuable and because, you know, it helped the schools and the students and families. That answer your question?
It seems like, I'll just say that marijuana is fairly well accepted culturally here, and I wonder, are you having any success or doing any education? I think because it's such a job choice and a family career for a lot of people, there's this feeling like it's not harmful. But there's been a lot of studies that have shown that it really does sort of freeze your development, your emotional, and mm-hmm. I've experienced this anecdotally with friends that just never seem to progress beyond a certain level because they just were high all the time. Are you getting that word out, I guess? Or is that getting into the harmful effects of that? Is that getting talked about?
Yes, and I think Jima has the greatest experience with that because through our work together, we talked a lot about, you know, the damages that marijuana can have at an early age, and, you know, she brought Ralph Ralph Cantor to Laytonville to talk to the students and the families and the community about the reality of early use of marijuana and the damaging effects on the brain. And so that, again, was cast on Youth Speaks Out. And for a while, Bronco funded that as well. So we were able to work with the students in the studio, or Dan was, and you know, solicit this information from them and their thoughts and feelings about it. So it's getting out in the schools more now than definitely 4 or 5 years ago.
Yes. So does this mean Bronco is completely over and there's no money? And so what about Youth Speaks Out? Is that gonna, how are we going to continue to fund that?
Youth Speaks Out is now funded through some of the grant program funding that Jamie receives in Laytonville, and I think it's continuing to go, right?
Yeah, so help us start kind of a grant with the federal government. It's called the Drug Free Communities Funding, and through that, one of the goals is to make parents in the community aware of what we call environmental prevention strategies. Has nothing to do with the environment, like the trees and the birds and whatnot, but it's a different way of looking at prevention, which simply means that if you can get a community to address an issue collectively and your partnership to address it collectively, and everybody's sort of on the same page and they've decided how they want to address it, it's more effective than me or Pat coming into a classroom and telling the kids blah 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 about marijuana, da 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 da. So we're able to sustain Youth Speaks Out through that funding. And just a quick follow-up to Holly's question is 4 or 5 years ago when we began this project, I was terrified at addressing the whole alcohol and other drug portion of it, because there is such a community acceptance when it comes to substance abuse, certainly throughout this county. And I didn't want to talk about the M word. Marijuana was off the table for me. I thought, I can't go into a classroom and talk about it. But I realized through doing this work and surveying the community and parents and talking with students that the community was ready for the information. I had people approaching me saying, hey, I've heard that there's something about the developing brain and drug interactions. What's that about? And so people were asking about it. So that's why we brought that speaker to Laytonville. And it's actually available on the Youth Speaks Out website. It was one of the most popular shows. And his entire two-hour presentation was audio recorded by Dan. And it's been downloaded from around the world thousands of times. It actually shut down their website because it was so popular.
Wow.
Because it's time to start talking about it. So.
What about the marriage and family therapists? Are they, is there no longer funding for them?
Well, like I said, the Willits District received an elementary counseling grant, so elementary kids will have an MFT as well as a social worker to work with. And in Round Valley, they also have the same grant funding, and they're doing it in a similar way. So in those two communities, the mental health services has sustained to a certain extent. And part of them receiving the grant funding was a result of the intensive data collection that we did, and it gave them the data that they needed in order to apply for the grant and have a better chance in getting it. And I do know also in Laytonville that two of the mental health counselors are sustained to an extent. One of them is doing voluntary work, and one of them works for Tapestry, who was one of our partners, and they're continuing to provide services to the students that are Medi-Cal eligible. And now with the Affordable Care Act, that number will increase. And so we've indirectly sustained that through building a system as opposed to just handing money to somebody else, you know, to do this and this and this. And again, I want to bring it back to that analogy of the Common Core, in that you're making connections and providing meaning to something that is going to be longer lasting, as opposed to doing it one group does it this way, another group does it that way, and then when there's nothing left, everything's gone. So that was our philosophy about sustainability, is that you look at that from the very beginning, when you're beginning services, when you're assessing needs, and you operate with that in mind, with the end in mind from the very beginning. That makes sense. Yes?
Just to preface my question, you know, if we look at young people, especially around the teenage years and just preteen, and understand that they are moving away from their parents as for guidance and relying more on their social group and becoming individualized. And I hear things from school system, like phrases like zero tolerance, which would be a bad word in any other aspect. We seem to be like we're segregating children that are having problems. For example, one of my son's best friends growing up through first, second, third grade, very, very bright kid, good morals, and a mother who celebrated, you know, marijuana, drugs, meth, and celebrated him for anything he did that was in alignment with her way of thinking. He was still maintaining his belief system, which was not hers, and I kind of became a mentor for him, and he stayed at my house about as often as he was at home. And in the fourth grade, he traded some candy for a very small pocket knife, not a switchblade, just a very small pocket knife, which I carried all the way through school. We were allowed to. He was caught with the pocket knife and expelled from the school. And I did go speak on his behalf when he was meeting with the principal and counselors in place of his mother, which was probably a good thing. And there was no tolerance. And it was very predictable what happened to him. Now he's in a different social group that are a bunch of other kids that are expelled. He didn't smoke pot. He didn't smoke cigarettes. He was not an aggressive kid ever, that any no history of it. Mm. So to be accepted, at first he was considered outside the group because he was too clean. But in his desire to be accepted, of course, he took it beyond what the other kids were doing so that he could come back into the group. Is there any push towards not segregating people into groups at an age when they are going to align themselves through human nature that's going to make it very difficult for a kid that age not to, regardless of their beliefs going into it, to be, instead of zero tolerance, to be proactive once we realize there's a problem and not segregate?
Yeah. I do know that there's a big push at the State Department of Education level where they're looking very closely at the number of suspensions that are happening, which happen for minor infractions all the way to, you know, larger ones like bringing a gun or a knife to school. There is a lot less tolerance in the schools, in the districts, than there ever has been in my experience, and I don't know if that's an absolute statement, but that's how I'm recalling things. But also the Tom Torlakson, who's the state superintendent of Department of Education, he's looking closely at a couple of areas. One is truancy, which is when kids are out of school, they're often doing things that are negative behavior and learning things and interacting with groups that perhaps they shouldn't. So he's looking at truancy, and he's also looking at discipline and suspension rates and creating some new policy around decreasing that. Looking Does that person, answer your question
kind of,
a little bit?
You're looking at a person for who they are. You know, if a kid has been packing a gun to school, I mean, we've had some examples, especially Colorado seems to be a hotbed on that I understand that, you know, or a switchblade or something that's a weapon. But, you know, this coffee cup could be a weapon.
Yeah.
Utilized right. As opposed, you know, looking at the individual case, and then if a person needs help or an alternative place to be because you don't feel they're safe for the general population in the school, not to put them in a, like, a person goes to prison, learn to be a criminal. They come out, they've learned. And the idea that you deal with that person, again, as we all kind of came to a person-centered way of helping that person to reintegrate rather than to become the product of the juvenile.
Right.
You know,
so,
so
like addressing the problem as opposed to the behavior.
Addressing the individual.
Yeah. the individual, in what is making them do something like that, or why are they behaving in that way. You know, I can't speak to that exactly as to what schools are doing in the classroom to address that. I think that's probably an individual thing that teachers either work with kids in that way. But certainly the resources that are available through counseling would hopefully address some of those things and allow the kids to be who they are, but also look at the behavior separate from the person, you know, and look at it in a way that allows them to be who they are, but not exhibit the behavior that is negative. That answer your question?
Yeah, I just wanted to really push towards that. It seems so predictable.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell when they're going to end. It was very obvious.
Yeah. I'm thinking that perhaps the Common Core might look at that a little bit because of students will now be have to connect a meaning to what they're learning and how their behavior interacts upon a group or upon their circle. So, you know, that could essentially help with that. I'm pretty excited about that myself, even though I don't know a whole lot about it. I think the concept kids learn to think more logically and look at how their behavior affects the rest of the classroom or the rest of the group, or why do they need to learn this, and how does it connect in their life? How does it affect them as an individual?
Mm-hmm. Any more questions for Pat before I turn it over to our class members of the panel?
We'll probably have a few minutes after our next group goes. Anybody thinks
they want to? Thank you, Pat.